Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Bible study from headquarters. We'll begin in chapter 14 and verse 1 tonight. After 2 days was the feast of the Passover and unleavened bread, and the chief priests and the scribes sought how they might take him by craft and put him to death. The wording here is a little bit awkward, but it's talking about coming into the time of the Passover and days of unleavened bread, a couple of days prior to that time, and things were developing and preparations were being made, and they were trying to figure out how they could arrest Jesus Christ and take him by trickery and put him to death. Verse 2, but they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar of the people. And being in Bethany, in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, or as he sat eating at the table, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment or flask of spikenard, very precious or costly, and she broke the box or flask and poured it on his head. I did a little research on this, and not only is this very rare and very costly, if you add up the cost, it would be probably a whole year's wages for the average wage earner at the time. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of the ointment made? We'll see as we read in other places in the Gospels, as we go through these four Gospels, that it gets a little more definitive about this particular event. And the main one that was causing a stink about this was Judas Iscariot, the one with the money bag. And he was all about money, you know. And boy, he was all indignant about this. And some of the others might have grumbled too, but he was the main one complaining. Verse 5, for it might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor, and they murmured against her. And Jesus said, let her alone. Why trouble you her? She has wrought a good work on me. For you have the poor with you always, and whensoever you will, you may do them good, but me you have not always. She has done what she could. She has come beforehand or aforehand to anoint my body to the burying. Verily I say unto you, wheresoever this gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she has done shall be spoken of her for a memorial of her. This woman here was, we'll see this in other scriptures as well as we move along. This was Mary of Bethany. Mary and Martha and Lazarus, they all lived at Bethany. Sisters and their brother, and they were close friends of Christ. And Mary came in knowing who he was, Jesus Christ, knowing what was about to happen to him. And so she poured this oil on him to underline how precious he was by pouring some of this precious oil on him and symbolically preparing him for the burial that will take place once he's been crucified. And some of them were murmuring, but the one murmuring the loudest, apparently, according to the other verses, was Judas Iscariot. So, this was a dedication to him. He's the Savior of the world. This is not wasting money. This is honoring him, God in the flesh. And Mary knew that. They didn't consider it yet because they hadn't come as far along as Mary spiritually, and some of them were still pretty carnal. They had to change, and they did later on. But especially Judas Iscariot was very carnal, and he didn't turn out well either. Verse 10, and Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, went unto the chief priest to betray him unto them. Actually set out to develop a plot to betray Jesus Christ, all the while being one of the 12 apostles, disciples and apostles, one of the inner circle, one of the 12 that were apostles, and later on, very powerful apostles, he wanted to betray him. And when they heard it, they were glad, the chief priest, and promised to give him money, and he sought how he might conveniently betray him. And the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where will you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? We've explained before that the days of unleavened bread and the Passover kind of became interchangeable. If you said days of unleavened bread, it was kind of like you were including the Passover. If you said Passover, it was kind of like you were including the days of unleavened bread. And most people on the Passover, the day of the Passover, a lot of people get the leavening out by then anyway, even though technically we don't have to have it out of our houses until the night to be observed, which is the beginning of the first day of unleavened bread. So they kind of go together, the Passover and days of unleavened bread, but you have to look into the context to see what they were talking about here. And when it says the first day of unleavened bread, when they killed the Passover, his disciples said unto him, where were you that we go and prepare that you may eat the Passover? They were talking about the 14th day of the first month. They were talking about the Passover day, which is not a holy day, even though it is a festival. They were talking about the night of the Passover day. The night of the 14th is what they were talking about here. And they were saying, where can we go to prepare the Passover for you? And he sent forth two of his disciples and said unto them, go you into the city, and there shall you meet a man bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him. And wheresoever he shall go in, say you to the good men of the house, say to the man in charge, the head of the house, say this to him, the master says, meaning Jesus Christ, where is the guest chamber where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples? And he will show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us. So even though they were talking about this at the beginning of the day of the Passover, or the beginning of the 14th, on the night of the 14th, they didn't have to do very much in getting ready for it. It was already prepared, and they brought the meal there. And so on the night of the 14th, the beginning of the 14th, they were getting together to take the Passover. And he shall show you a large upper room furnished and prepared. There make ready for us. And his disciples went forth and came into the city and found as he had said unto them, and they made ready the Passover. And in the evening he comes with the 12, the evening of the 14th. They took a little while to get ready, and that same evening they gathered on the 14th day of the first month, the beginning of Wednesday. And they were getting ready to take the Passover. Verse 18. And as they sat and did eat, he said, verily I say unto you, one of you which eats with me shall betray me. And they began to be sorrowful and to say unto him, one by one, is it I? Just carefully going around and asking him personally, is it I? And another said, is it I? And he answered and said unto them, it is one of the 12 that dips with me in the dish. I think the ones that were saying, is it I and is it I, were those right close to him and those that were in close proximity to him. And they weren't going to betray him, but they wondered, are you thinking I'm the one? Is it I? And he said, it is one of the 12 that dips with me in the dish, as they were having dinner. And the Son of Man indeed goes, as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. Good were it for that man if he had never been born. But he was born, and he willingly went along with this, and his name was Judas Iscariot. Verse 22, and as they did eat, Jesus took bread and blessed and broke it and gave to them and said, take, eat, this is my body. Now, of course, we have to put all the verses together on this subject. They had the foot washing service here, and then he took the bread, and then he took the wine and instituted the symbols of the New Testament Passover. He changed the way the Passover was to be observed. He didn't change the time in which it was to be observed, which continues to be the 14th day of the first month at even, just after sunset. But he changed the way it was to be observed in terms of the symbols. And that is, we no longer slay a lamb and eat that animal. Now he becomes the Passover lamb. So he said, this bread is symbolic of my broken body, and this wine is symbolic of my shed blood, as he instituted the New Testament Passover. Verse 22, and as they did eat, Jesus took bread and blessed it and broke it and gave to them and said, take, eat, this is my body. Verse 23, and he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank of it. And he said unto them, this is my blood of the New Testament, which is shed for many. Verily I say unto you, I will drink no more of the fruit of the vine until that day that I drink it new in the kingdom of God. So we follow this pattern. We follow this clear example in God's church today, and we do this as well. He didn't open with prayer. He didn't close with prayer. Neither do we. He blessed the bread, and he blessed the wine. We ask his blessing on the bread and wine. And then when we finish with the Passover service, we do what they did then, verse 26. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. And Jesus said unto them, all you shall be offended because of me this night, for it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after that I am risen, I will go before you in Galilee, he told them. But Peter said unto him, all shall be offended, yet will not I. Oh, everybody else might stumble, everybody else might be offended, but I tell you, I will not be offended, and I will not stumble. And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto you, that this day, even in this night, before the rooster crows twice, you shall deny me three times, is what he told Peter. But he spake the more vehemently, Peter did, if I should die with you, I will not deny you in any wise. And that was what he was determined to do. But, of course, once again, he wasn't converted yet, so he caved in. But I want you to notice something now that a lot of people overlook. They think, well, Peter's the only one who said this. Well, look at this. If I should die with you, I will not deny you in any wise. Likewise also said they all. They all said that. We're not going to turn our back on you. We're not going to cave. We're not going to run. We're with you all the way. You can count on us, see? Which they meant to do. But you can mean to do something, and then when you get into the heat of the moment and you see it, it's not like you thought it would be. Sometimes you make different decisions. And that's where character starts to show. And that's where courage starts to emerge. And that's where what you're really made of begins to shine through. Likewise also said they all, and they came to a place which is named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit you here while I shall pray. And he took with him Peter and James and John and began to be sore amazed and to be very heavy. He began to be greatly troubled and distressed. And he said unto them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful unto death. Tarry you here and wait for me. My life, my being is really, really stressed out because of what's facing me. Don't forget, he was a human being. He was God in the flesh. He had feelings. He had emotions. He had nerve endings. He had blood vessels. He had muscles. And he had pain. And he was dreading what he was about to have to go through. He wasn't going to back out, but he was dreading it because he knew it was going to be a terrible ordeal. And so he wanted to pray and get extra help from God, and he was really having to wrestle with it at this time, not deciding will I or won't I, but getting ready to endure it. My life, my being, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful unto death. Tarry you here and watch. And he went forward a little and fell on the ground and prayed that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. He kneeled down before the great God on the ground. And he said, Abba, Father. Abba meaning a personal kind of title addressed to Father. It wasn't just Father, but it was really a special way of addressing God the Father. Father, Dad, my maker, my being. Abba, Father. All things, he said that, all things are possible unto you. Take away this cup from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what you will. And I don't know of any attitude more important than that. The bottom line of all of us has to be, not my will, Father, your will be done. And that was the bottom line with Jesus Christ. I'm talking to you about what I feel, Father. I'm talking to you about what I'm hoping for. I'm talking to you about what I'm requesting. I'm talking to you about what other way there might be. But one thing is for sure, the bottom line is this, Father, not my will, but your will be done. And he came back, he comes, and he finds them sleeping and said unto Peter, Simon, sleepest thou? Could not you watch 1 hour, Peter? Could you stay awake and kind of be watching while I'm over there praying? I thought I could count on you. Verse 38, watch you and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit truly is ready, but the flesh is weak. Be careful, Peter. Be on your toes. I know you talk a good fight, You say good things. That's what you intend. But then there's a matter of being human and having flesh and having feelings and succumbing to those feelings. So there were lessons to be learned here by everyone. Verse 39, and again he went away and prayed and spoke the same words, prayed again to God about this matter. And when he returned, he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy. Neither wist they what to answer him, neither did they know what to answer him or what to say or how to respond. And he comes a third time. He kept going back to God. He wasn't nagging God. He wasn't using vain repetition. He was beseeching God. He was importuning God. He was really looking to God and asking him about this matter and discussing it with him, but always not my will, Father, but your will be done. Verse 40, and when he returned, he found them asleep again, for their eyes were heavy, neither knew they what to answer him. And he comes the third time and said unto them, sleep on now and take your rest. It is enough. The hour is come. Behold, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. This particular translation in verse 41 doesn't really make it clear. It's like he said, okay, you're so sleepy. All right, fine. Just go ahead and sleep on and take your rest. That's not what he meant. He came back and found them sleeping. And the third time he came back and found them sleeping, he didn't tell them, well, since you're going to do it anyway, just go ahead and do it. A better translation renders this differently. Are you still sleeping and resting? Not sleep on now and take your rest. There you go sleeping again, and there you go resting again. In other words, he was saying, he comes a third time, and he says, are you still sleeping and resting? Every time I come back, I expect you to be watching, but you're asleep. And here you are again. Are you still sleeping and resting? That's the better translation in verse 41. Then he says, it is enough. It's over. It's done. It's finished. Now comes the end, so to speak. It is enough. The hour is come. Behold, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Verse 42, rise up, let us go. Lo, he that betrays me is at hand. He wouldn't say, all right, go ahead and go to sleep, and then say, rise up. So that's why I'm explaining and clarifying what the real translation and real meaning is. He says, all right, it's enough. We've done all we can do here. The time has come. Everybody get up. Let's go. It's all set in motion now. It's underway. Verse 43, talking about his betrayal and everything that followed after that. Verse 43, and immediately while he yet spake, comes Judas, one of the 12, and with him a great multitude. See, the other of the 12 stayed at a distance away while he took with him Peter, James, and John to pray. Well, now, immediately, Judas shows up where they are. He came. One of the 12, and with him a great multitude. They were looking for him, and now they found him. So now they close in on where he was. Once he'd finished praying, and once the ones who were to be watching had dozed off, and now he said, no more dozing off, let's go. And immediately, while he yet spoke, comes Judas, one of the 12, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves, or clubs, from the chief priests and the scribes and the elders. And he that betrayed him had given them a token or a sign or a signal, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he. Take him and lead him away safely. And as soon as he was come, he goes straightway to him and says, Master, Master, and he kissed him. And that was a signal. As I've said before, if Jesus Christ looked like he's pictured in these drawings, kind of a thin, white, skinny weakling with a long gown on and long hair and a tear running down his cheek, surrounded by all these powerful, masculine fishermen and hard-working outdoorsmen, all that Judas would have had to say to the ones that showed up, that gang, that mob of thugs, he would have just said, see that freak over there? He's the one. But he blended in with those masculine outdoor powerful men that worked hard and that were very strong. He blended in with them. He looked like them. He didn't have long hair. He had short hair like them. And he was an average-looking, powerful, Jewish young man who was used to working hard being outside. That's what the other group looked like too. And so the only way they would know who he was is for Judas to point him out in some way. And they, of course, agreed ahead of time that the signal would be who he walked up and greeted with a kiss on the cheek, a custom of greetings and all that. And he went over there and he said, okay, the one that I kiss, that's going to be the one you want. And when you see me do that, then lead him away safely. So he walked up to him, master, master, and he kissed him. And what'd they do? Well, they laid hands on him and took him. They grabbed him. And one of them that stood by drew a sword and smote a servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. Once again, we'll read in other sections of the Bible that this was Peter who did that. He said, you're not going to take him. I'm going to protect him. And so he drew the sword, and he wasn't swinging for this guy's ear. He didn't say, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll take care of this guy. I'll just reach up and I'll very cleanly just kind of slice off his ear. He was going for his head. He swung for his head, and the servant of the high priest kind of moved and ducked, and it caught his ear, and he cut his ear right off. Now, we'll see as we go into this in other sections of the Gospels, Christ rebuked Peter, told him to get behind him, and he reached down and got the ear and put it back on the man and healed him, and he got his ear back. That's what Christ can do. And so he restored his ear fully. It doesn't say Peter here, but it says Peter in other places. It's clear that it was Peter that did this. Verse 48, and Jesus answered and said unto them, are you come out as against a thief with swords and with clubs and staves to take me? I was daily with you in the temple teaching, and you took me not. You could have taken me then, but you didn't. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. That's why this is all developing, but you don't know the scriptures and the prophecies. And they all forsook him and fled. See, they said, I'm not going to flee. I'm not going to forsake you. I'm going to be right there with you. I'm in it with you. But what happened? They all forsook him and fled. And there followed him a certain young man having a linen cloth cast about his naked body, and the young man laid hold on him. And he left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. Who was this? A young man was right there, and so they laid hands on Jesus Christ, and he was still there, so they laid hands on him, and he made a maneuver and left them holding the bag, so to speak, left them holding his clothes as he took off. And it's pretty clear that this young man mentioned here was Mark. He was talking about himself. He just didn't name himself. He didn't name Peter. He didn't name Mary, and he didn't name himself. But we certainly do feel that's who he's talking about here. He hadn't yet fully come to the total commitment he did later on in serving Jesus Christ and serving his people and being a very powerful servant later on in helping and serving alongside Peter and Paul. So he was a young man here that just made a maneuver to shed his clothes, and they were hanging on to his clothes, and he didn't have any clothes on, and he took off running out into the night and escaped. Mark did. He left the linen cloth and fled from them naked. So he was kind of feeling guilty about forsaking him as well, and he mentions it here, but he doesn't mention his name. All of these men changed later and actually died for him. Most all of them were martyred for it and endured to the end, but they just had to grow from this point, as we all have to grow. Verse 53, and they led Jesus away to the high priest, and with him were assembled all the chief priests and the elders and the scribes. And Peter followed him afar off, kind of hung back at a distance, even under the palace of the high priest. And he sat with the servants and warmed himself at the fire. And the chief priest and all the council, the Sanhedrin, sought for witness against Jesus to put him to death and found none, a testimony against him to put him to death and found none. For they bear false witness against him, but their witness agreed not together. All false accusations. This was an illegal trial. It was a false charge. It was a trumped up court, and it was all based on lies. And they couldn't even agree among themselves. And so they were trying to patch it together so that they could make a case, and they couldn't. And finally, they figure out a way to do it. verse 57, there arose certain and bare false witness against him. Verse 58, we heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. And they lied all the time, and they lied about this. Let's just notice verse 58 and compare that with John 2. John 2 and verse 19, just to show how they lied then and how people lie today in cases that are brought. John chapter 2 and verse 19. Verse 18, then answered the Jews and said unto him, what sign showest thou unto us, seeing that you do these things? And Jesus answered and said unto them, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. They said, he said, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another temple without hands. That's not what he said. He said, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Then said the Jews, verse 20, 46 years was this temple in building, and will you rear it up in 3 days? Verse 21, but he spoke of the temple of his body. See, he was talking about they were going to take him, crucify him, put him in a tomb, and in 3 days he would rise up, he would be resurrected. Speaking of his body, the temple of his body, the Bible interprets the Bible. So that's in John chapter 2 and verse 19. Okay, back to Mark chapter 14 and verse 58. We heard him say, I will destroy this temple that is made with hands, and within 3 days I will build another made without hands. And so John chapter 2, 19 clarifies that and what he was talking about. Verse 59, but neither so did their witness agree together. And the high priest stood up in the midst and asked Jesus, saying, answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witness or testify against you? But he held his peace. He kept silent and answered nothing. Again, the high priest asked him and said unto him, are you the Christ, the Son of the Blessed? And Jesus answered, I am. And you shall see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent his clothes and says, what need we any further witnesses? And he tore his clothes, and he didn't even do that at a legal time and in a legal way. And he was making a false charge, and he was doing this in a flamboyant, dramatic gesture to underline how terrible Jesus was and how something needs to be done here. And, you know, you could just see all this drama that they were pulling together to try to make their case. What need we any further witness? You have heard the blasphemy. What think you? They all condemned him to be guilty, and they all condemned him to be guilty of death. And there was nothing that he said or did that made him guilty of death. But they kept trumping up the charges and pushing, and playing politics is what it was. And some began to spit on him and to cover his face, to blindfold him, and to beat him or buffet him, and to say unto him, prophesy. And the servants did strike him with the palms of their hands, fists and slaps and punches, and telling him, okay, you're blindfolded, you can't see. Now, if you who you say you are, tell us who just hit you. You know, just so utterly disrespectful and hateful and mean and brutal. And as Peter was beneath in the palace, there comes one of the maids of the high priest. He was below in the courtyard of the palace, Peter was, warming himself. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, you also were with him. And you also were with Jesus of Nazareth. Said it right in front of people. You were with him. But he denied, saying, I know not, neither understand I what you say. And he went out into the porch, and the rooster crowed. Verse 69, and a maid saw him again, a servant girl, and began to say to them that stood by, this is one of them. Peter, this man right here, might not have called his name, but this man, referring to Peter, he was one of them. He's a part of this Jesus group. And he denied it again. And a little after, they that stood by said again to Peter, surely you are one of them, for you are a Galilean, and your speech agrees thereto. Your accent proves you're from that part of the country. You have a Galilean accent. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom you speak. So there was Peter now. He was tough. He had a temper, and he had lost his cool. And boy, he started just letting it fly, lying and denying Christ, just like Christ said he would. Verse 72, and the second time the rooster crowed. And Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him, before the rooster crows twice, you will deny me three times. And when he thought thereon, he wept. And I think probably this was the beginning of Peter coming to really deep, profound, total repentance. He just sobbed because he had done what he said he wouldn't do and Christ said he would do. And now he just saw how far away he was from being deeply converted and yielded to Christ. And so he just broke down and cried and wept. And I think that was the beginning of his deep, total conviction, commitment, and conversion, even though he was already with Christ. I wanted to point out one thing. Verse 30, it says, Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto you that this day, even this night, before the rooster crows twice, you shall deny me three times. I wanted to mention verse 30 because that shows that the day starts at night, not at midnight, but at sunset. The beginning of the day is when it gets dark. Sunset, night, this day, even in this night. There are other places that show that too, but there's an example of how the day starts at sunset, starts with the beginning of darkness, not at midnight. All right, I believe that covers most of or all of the notes that I have that I wanted to cover with chapter 14. Okay, we'll stop there. Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.